This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Shelby, would you like to try the sauce I made? It's so good, I swear.
I was curious on your reading of that. You're a fan.
Of Toni Collette?
Yeah, of her bit in this film.
I mean, I'm a fan of Toni Collette in every capacity. I think it would be hard to find a capacity that I didn't love her in.
Sure, I saw a video.
I don't even know where this would have come from, but there was some like group of people who were all dancing to Dancing Queen from Muriel's Wedding, and then she like sort of stormed the stage and was dancing with them, and I was like, honestly, iconic. Yeah, like. She's great. I mean, I even dare I say liked her in Mafia Mama. So, you know, I don't even know. I'm really, you have to have seen the trailer for Mafia Mama at some point. That came out like maybe 2 years ago where she like goes to Italy for her like grandpa's funeral
and doesn't realize that they're in the mob.
Yes. It's like her and, what's her face? Bellucci or whatever. Monica Bellucci? Whatever. Yeah. And she's like, I have to take over the mob now.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
It's all coming back to me.
Her making sauce as like the first lady of a penal colony.
I mean,
or whatever,
is blending single ingredient considered a sauce? I had my issue with that. That's just not what a sauce is. A sauce requires multiple ingredients.
Does it? Is that a rule?
I mean, otherwise, like, what is it? It's just, you know, if I blended, if it's just olive oil, it's just olive oil. It's not a sauce. But if I mix in olive oil and balsamic vinegar and garlic and lemon, then it's a sauce, you know?
According to Oxford Dictionary, a sauce is a thick liquid served with food, usually savory dishes, to add moistness and flavor. So none of this says it has to be multiple ingredients, Shelby.
I guess. Okay. Sauce truther out here. No, I'm we're talking about Mickey 17, which is a discombobulating film and honestly deserving of this sort of confusing start. But we were both excited about this, and I'm really, 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 really curious about your reaction.
Well, yeah, because Mickey 17 is Bong Joon-ho's follow-up to Parasite, which, you know, won Best Picture. And obviously he had made movies before, like Snowpiercer and Okja and stuff, but I think Parasite was his real, like, big you know, breakthrough, especially in America, and was the movie that really made him like a, I don't want to say household name, but you know, like semi, like,
yeah, no, for sure. It gave him a blank check for his next film, and this is the one he did.
He decided to make this, which is like a sci-fi comedy sort of thing starring Robert Pattinson. It's based on a novel from a couple of years ago that I did not read or had not heard of.
What's fascinating is that he bought the rights before the novel even published. So he wrote his script based on an early draft of the novel. So it's like, it's kind of, I mean, that happens, especially nowadays, as people race to get the next big thing, but sort of similar to Argyle in that it was picked up and that gave it hype that the published book never actually got because I don't know, like it was kind of a nothing when it finally did publish.
Look, when you know, if if you're reading.
He's like, this is a good idea and I'm going to make it better. And I don't know, I didn't read the book, so I can't say for sure.
I'm sort of surprised you didn't read the book because I feel like, you know, you read so many books, like you might as well pick this one up. Like, how long is it? Let's investigate. The book is called Mickey 7, which I also think is sort of interesting that in the book where, because it's about this guy who signs up to be an expendable on this spaceship that's traveling to start a new colony. And basically what that means is that he will keep getting killed and sort of recloned. So there's these different versions of him. And in the book, I guess, presumably the version that's the main character is Mickey 7, the seventh version. And in the movie, it's Mickey 17. So there's 10 extra sort of dead versions of Robert Pattinson in the movie rather than in the book. So, also, it looks like it's a series.
Well, I'm sure. I mean,
because this Edward Ashton, who's the writer, there's like on what's this site called? Amazon. It says that it's a 2-book series, but the first book only has 300 pages, so pretty short for a sci-fi book. Shelby, you should have read it.
I know, but I mean, I don't think anyone's saying like, oh, read the book, it's better. It just seems like one of those things where, you know, respectfully, he did his due diligence and gave credit where credit was due and, you know, bought the rights to make this movie. But it shares none of the similarities, I don't think, because this is really from the mind of Bong Joon-ho and also Robert Pattinson, who was signed early on. And so they both kind of storyboarded the whole thing together. And made this, sci-fi epic, which is, you know, I think I've seen more. Like, I watched Monster, which was one of his first films, which is like a classic Korean monster movie. And then obviously Snowpiercer, which was an early Chris Evans vehicle that was then turned into a show. And so this, in some ways, did feel like a return to his usual fare, whereas Parasite was kind of, you know, it moved away from the sci-fi element. It was very serious, obviously still funny, but more grounded. And so this was kind of a return to his more wonky, like kind of quirky, high concept premises and a lot of genre bending elements of humor and sci-fi and gore and all of that. But yeah, it in some ways felt a little too ambitious. Like it couldn't really figure out how to exist as a as one solid film for me personally. There was just a lot going on and none of it really worked itself out in an interesting way. And it also suffered because like a lot of it is narration. Where Mickey 17 walks us through his other previous lives. And so for the present 17 action, you're actually not in that set for that long.
Yeah. I'm getting the sense that you did not like this movie very much.
I didn't. I mean, obviously, I think he's a really talented filmmaker, and I think everyone in this cast is very talented, and it's always fun to see someone who probably wouldn't have gotten the budget to spend, you know, I think this came to about $200 million all in. You know, I'm all for that, and he had fun with it, but I do think it struggled under its own weight. I just wish it had focused a little bit more on one or two pieces instead of playing with five or six, you know? There's a lot happening.
There was, but the movie is kind of long. I mean, it's over 2 hours. I guess the thing to say in the setup is like, this is probably one of my favorite genres of movies. I do love outer space movies. Like, it's hard for me to even sort of think of ones that I really didn't like, and especially sci-fi stuff that's a little bit zany or kooky or campy, you know, like I am in for. And this felt to me a lot like, you know, like Jupiter Ascending, Cloud Atlas, like Ad Astra, like these big sort of bombastic sci-fi epics. And I really like all of those movies. Like, I know people don't like Cloud Atlas. They don't like Jupiter Ascending. I'm like, I think that those are just so much fun. And especially with this, it's like, I thought that all of the performances were really fun. It's gorgeously shot. I thought that it was you know, funny and sort of interesting. I didn't know where it was going. And yeah, like I enjoyed it. Like I feel like I have watched movies that are under 2 hours that felt way longer than this. Like I was sort of enjoying the ride and I really like all of the actors in it. So I don't like, I think this movie has, and I think this is common with sci-fi. Like if I sat down and like looked at the script or watched it again and sort of like went through and was like trying to make sense of the world building and all of that, I'm sure that there are lots of threads that you can pull and sort of have the thing fall apart. I feel like...
Well, my issue is not really with like the world building or like, oh, that's not how cloning works or like, how do they get material, blah, blah, blah. It's like plotting issues, I feel like, where whole threads were never really, I don't know, explored or revisited, even if they were set up like to be a more major point. Like for instance, okay, first one to come to mind is there's like a 15 minute bit in the middle where they have the copy, the duplicate. And so
Mickey 18?
Mickey 17 versus Mickey 18.
Yeah.
And Mickey 17 has this weird flirtation with another person on the ship, but it ultimately goes home to his girlfriend to tell her that there's a duplicate and she needs to be looking out for this liar. But the girlfriend is like, no, I'm interested in two of you. And then the other girl comes in and is like, oh my gosh, there's two of you, and has this like extended negotiation with the main girl to be like, well, we can share them, we can split them, I'll get this one, you get that one. And it's like, I thought it was emphasizing something important because it kept cutting back between the girls and the boys where they were talking about this. And then the boys were talking about how they could like figure out this plan and what matters. And like, am I a coward or am I not? Like what version of Mickey am I? And then the girls are like sort of negotiating who gets which boy toy. And it was just kind of like in the middle of action. And I was sort of like, okay, so does this girl matter? And it's like, no, in the end, she just copies her girlfriend back. Like I guess it was like, I like zany. I like fun. I'm down for some humor, but I feel like it just got overwhelmed in these sort of sitcom-y like setups for TV episodes rather than making an interesting, tightly, you know, wrapped film.
Yeah, this wasn't, I mean, I think comparing it to Parasite is so tricky because Parasite is so tight where it feels like every scene is expertly sort of plotted and fits in with the next one. And it's just like, and that's why it won Best Picture, obviously. It's just such a smart movie. And this did feel a little bit more raucous where there's things where you're kind of like, okay, we'll like, are we going to come back to that? Or like, what's sort of going on here?
Yeah.
But I liked, I don't know, I wasn't turned off by that in the same way. Like, do I think this movie's perfect? No. Did I have a lot of fun with it? Yes. Did I like the sequence where there's like this woman like chasing them around and then it's like, oh, is this gonna be a Challenger's like threesome? Oh no, we're gonna split up. And then the Mickeys are also kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, like you get Kara, like I'll take her. I thought that the whole thing was pretty I don't know, just like entertaining and interesting, because also these clones are in some ways real people, obviously, but in other ways they're kind of not. And so to watch them sort of, I don't know, like grapple with that, but not in the same way that we've seen on like Westworld or Companion mm-hmm. or something that really takes itself seriously.
Yeah.
There was something very charming, I think, about the whole thing. And yeah. I was just kind of like, okay, this is fun.
Well, I agree. Yeah. And I'm like I loved Robert Pattinson in this. I think he's really talented and he had fun like doing different, like every iteration of him is just slightly different in this sort mm-hmm. of unique way. And so I liked the premise. And I think that was where its like richest piece was. And even with the girlfriend example and like the flip-flopping between them, like that's fine to keep. It became all the other like I don't know, political dressings and machinations around the world itself that kind of dragged that down for me on the joy scale, because I just started to feel kind of like there were so many personalities and it wasn't set up to be like, I don't know, like some sort of like it, like they were trying to emphasize different political structures where,
yeah,
but then it was never clear like who was actually in charge. And like, yeah, that could be, it doesn't necessarily matter, except that the film spent so much time making us think it mattered, like whether Toni Collette was pulling the strings or whether the like spiritual leader was the one in charge and what each of them wanted this for and why they were filming and the end goals. And then there was suddenly this like, I don't know, security force who was operating the ship all along, or like he's just like, you guys are under arrest. And it was like, yeah, okay. And then it was like, I don't know, it was just, there was a lot of background detail which I felt like took away from the fun of this sort of like duplicate situation.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. I felt like that the weakest part of this movie was sort of like whatever satire it was going after.
Yeah,
because again, Parasite is so hard hitting in what it is doing with the sort of class warfare, eat the rich, yeah, critique on capitalism. And this, you could tell that there is some of that going on in some capacity, because it's like, it's this ship, and most of the people on the ship are sort of like poor and don't have that much going on for them and are eating these like gross gruel. Obviously Robert Pattinson's character is getting killed off and coming back to life, sort of like, and he's there to, you know, sort of test like vaccines and,
yeah,
send him out into the wilderness to explore, because if he dies, it doesn't matter. And then you have, yeah, Mark Ruffalo and Toni Collette as like the aristocrats who are, you know, living high on the hog and have all of this money, but are also really kind of stupid in some regards. And there's, yeah, definitely like some Trumpy things going on with Mark Ruffalo. Like all of his sort of fans are wearing these red hats, which I think are obviously supposed to be connected to like the Make America Great thing. But the one-to-one comparisons aren't strong enough, I think, to really like say anything too particular, aside from the fact that like rich people kind of suck.
And it's like a religious cult, but then it's also, yeah, like a cult of personality.
Yes. And it's like Toni Collette is kind of pulling the strings, it seems, yeah, like. But then at the end, it's like, but oh wait, no, she's sauce. Just in, yeah, yeah, she just cares about cooking this sauce. So I felt like, yeah, there needed to be some tidying up there. Like it either needed to be more vague or more specific. I think it was, yeah, kind of riding a line of like, it's, yeah, too specific for me not to think about Donald Trump, but not specific enough for me to really like take away any hard hitting points other than just like, oh yeah, like these rich dictators are bad. And it's like, okay, well, I think we all sort of knew that. Where Parasite, I think, you know, is saying something a lot more interesting about these,
yeah,
social classes, or even Snowpiercer, I think, is,
oh yeah,
is more cutting in its critique, yeah, where this felt like a lot of the movie was just having fun. And then this critique was sort of like, I don't think it was added on. Like, I think it was there from the beginning,
yeah,
but didn't quite feel like it was given enough attention.
Yeah. It was the sauce. It was the sauce on the side.
Yes.
Of this, like, comedy bit, like premise. And I didn't go into it comparing it to Parasite because I knew this would be more something like Snowpiercer or Monster,
yeah,
where it's definitely like more zany. And but even those films of his I've seen are more like rooted in character. And yes, this has some cool character moments, especially with Mickey 18's like growth through the film. But it was also like really just phoning it in on any of the other characters, like especially the female characters. And like the monster got more attention than the girlfriend did. Like, I don't know, I couldn't get a read on anything because it almost felt like he didn't care about the details, which is like, you know, some films are like that. But I do feel like if you're going to just kind of go for quirky, zany, personality-driven art, then, yeah, don't bother with this sort of okay, we're going to make this guy racist, but also he's dumb, but also he's religious, but also he's egotistical. Like, it was like we got like snippets of these weird, like, oh, we're going to talk about making a white race on this ship, but we also have a lot of black people on this ship. So then how is that like actually a relevant commentary? Like, and then, yeah, the like religion versus capitalism, like workforce, like some of them are there because they believe in the cause and some of them are there for the paycheck. And I don't know. I ultimately was just like, yeah, it was like, I don't know. It was like your classic kind of sci-fi into another world. There's a species living there already. Are you going to destroy them? Are you going to live in peace with them? It was literally like the Lightyear movie.
Oh, I did not see that.
You did not see, but it's like the exact same premise of like them landing on this planet, hoping to build a, you know, safe
Buzz Lightyear's clone. He's having sex with himself and the female astronaut.
Well, I mean, not exactly, but like the whole, you know, he's like, I don't know. The aliens themselves felt very familiar. The like little, they're very cute.
I love them, the little creepers. I was like,
it was like, I didn't need this. We could tell what was being communicated without needing an actual, like, you know, vocal translator, you know? Like, it was like, that was what was cute about the whole they saved him, didn't eat him thing, is that you could like pick up on the cues without them needing to say, no, we're actually good people, like, take care of yourself out there, you know?
But don't you want a stuffed animal version of one of those little guys?
I felt bad when they were killing them. But I just feel like a lot of the beats in this film were kind of derivative. And I know that's hard to avoid in sci-fi, but like literally one of the final speeches is like, we're the aliens. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, but it didn't feel earned because that hadn't been like a relevant thinking point for any of these characters up until 5 minutes before making that connection.
Yeah, there was sort of like, yeah, there was kind of like some global warming, like indigenous people sort of plot lines that, again, yeah, felt a little bit like, I don't want to say half-baked, but like there was just a lot of different political commentary going on, and it felt like we needed to pick a couple of those to really hit hard if we were going to say something interesting, and instead we just kind of said a lot about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, I guess I also just really respond to kind of the originality of it. Like, obviously there are things that are derivative, as is in all sci-fi, but the fact that it was just making such like big swings, I thought was fun.
But what was the big swing? Like having a guy in a pigeon suit? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like they're on a ship. They have limited resources.
Well, I liked all the cloning stuff, and I liked all of the different like iterations of his life.
Yes.
And the scenes where they're like, okay, walk out into this wilderness and pretend you're breathing in a parasite, like really suck it down. I thought all of the stuff with the different Robert Pattinson's was a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Like you said, with Mickey 18 versus Mickey 17, sort of his kind of relationship with the scientists and some of the things that they were saying with each other, and just the fact that nobody really cared. And I did think that the relationship between him and the girlfriend, who was played by the Naomi Aki from Blink Twice, I thought that their relationship was fun. I guess I think the thing that would have been more interesting to sort of go in there, which they did a little bit, but I wish they had spent more time in, is the fact that she has been in a relationship with a bunch of different versions of this person.
Yeah.
And like, how does that change? Because she sort of talks about like, oh, like one of them was more grumpy and one of them was, you know, slept a lot.
She doesn't talk. He tells us.
Or he says that she has told him this about the past iterations.
Yeah.
And I wish that there had been a bit more of that. I thought that sort of dynamic would have been more fascinating.
Because it wasn't clear like why she was so chill about the duplicates. Because I was like, oh, she's just a drugged out like sex addict. Like she just uses him for the, she's just into this boy toy. Like, he's just a sex piece for her. But then it was clear that there was real feeling, but it was sort of like, who is this person? And like, why?
I mean,
like, I liked that she was sort of this territorial, you know, psychopath light, where she'd beat up anyone who didn't take care of him or like got into the cage with him, and like all that stuff is cute. But it also didn't make sense when we saw her in real time, like what she was doing or saying, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think that the fact that she is dating somebody who's like died so many times and keeps coming back and in different iterations makes her kind of like flippancy about certain things a little bit more believable, because it's like, okay, yeah, she's like, she knows that she's in this weird relationship with this weird person who's like also maybe not a person, because it's just keeps getting rebuilt, you know what I mean? Like, the movie doesn't really get into that aspect of it very much, but it does talk at various points about like, oh, he's sort of just like plastic, or you know, it's like he's just like recycled apple peels and things that they've mushed together into this human being that falls out of the machine. Which again, I think would be more interesting to see, like, okay, does she have to grapple with the fact that she's dating this person? Like, what are her thoughts on dating this robot creature?
Yeah.
Because also, he's like the only one on the ship. Yes.
Yeah,
it's like, it's not like there's a whole bunch of these expendables. It's like they had a hard time figuring out, like, getting anybody to sign up for this role, and he only does it because he owes somebody money. Actually, the part of the movie that I found the most boring and sort of the part where I was like, why is this here? We should have cut this, is his relationship with the Steven Yeun character.
Yeah.
He's kind of like this
he got him in debt with the macaroon shop
person. Yeah. Who got him in trouble in the first place and is the reason why he's an expendable. It's like, obviously you need that character for the backstory as to why he signs up to be an expendable. But after that, I'm sort of like, that man does not need to be on this ship. And he keeps popping up to sort of like run a scheme or something that most of the time doesn't have anything to do with the plot that much. And I didn't feel like there was that much payoff for him either. And so if I had to cut one thing, I think I would have chopped that character and then, you know, given more time to.
But he's so cute.
Yeah, so I think the thing with it, like, this movie's making a lot of big swings and it is having a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed that. I think that, you know, as RuPaul once told somebody, edit. And it's like,
Wise words.
I think that we needed to cut a couple, like, in the political landscape, we needed to cut a few of those and really focus in on a couple of them. With these characters, like, it might have been nice to cut one or two and sort of more focus in on the others. Like, we probably didn't need Mark Ruffalo, Toni Collette, and the like voodoo pastor person. Like, we probably only needed like one or two of those characters. So
it's like, trust your audience, because I feel like, especially when you get into a place that has so much voiceover, it really does become a lot of telling versus showing, and yet you're also showing it, because that's the form of the medium, you know? Whereas I feel like we could all imagine what would drive someone to be an expendable. Like, I don't need a reason for why someone would sign up for that. It's easy enough to imagine in our hellscape of a world. But then on top of that, it's like, he had this whole middle arc where he explains duplicates, and you see this whole political process of the, you know, courts deciding whether or not duplicates were ethical or not. And it turns out there was a serial killer using, like, it was all just like that's a clever idea of why someone would want to be a duplicate, but it doesn't matter for this film right now. So you don't need to explain to us why duplicates are bad. It's pretty immediately obvious when there's the two of you wake up in the same bed and you're like, holy shit, who gets the food for the day, you know? And so I just felt like there was a lot of like gleefulness around this world building without really any curiosity about like making it realistic. And I don't want it to be realistic. I don't need like 7 hours explaining the science of this. But then I also do not need some sort of quirky side character situation where we find out like how we all got here, you know?
I I don't always love a voiceover, but I feel like that is something that people just lob criticisms at in movies, you know, like, ah, like, this is stupid. Why do we have voiceover? And I think it's fun a lot of times because it does sort of give that like journal sort of entry vibe to it. And I thought that Robert Pattinson is such a good actor, and the dialogue that he had was funny, and sort of how he jumps back and forth between things and his just like commentary on stuff. So I didn't really mind the voiceover at all.
I didn't mind all of it, but I'm saying it's like, if every real moment needs a throwback, it just becomes kind of like, it just takes you out of it. Like, it's like, I really didn't need that middle piece about duplicates. I don't know.
I liked the duplicate stuff in the middle. I thought the cloning stuff was the most fun. I think that there is like adjustments that I would make to this if I was given the script, but as a whole, I thought all of the like pieces sort of worked and were good. I just like, or maybe not all the pieces worked and were good, but like, I think that the germs of all of the ideas here worked for me. It was more in the like execution that I felt like there was something lacking. Like the basic plot of, okay, there's this guy, he's hard up for money, he signs up to be an expendable, he's on this ship, the ship is ran by this crazy sort of politician guy, they get to this planet, he meets these creatures, and they overthrow the bad guy. It's like, oh, I think that works, and I think all of those elements are kind of like interesting. It's just there's too much stuff going on, and it's not like specific enough in some of the messaging. And it just needed to be like zhuzhed a bit. And I think that this, again, sort of is a problem that comes up a lot with directors who have made very successful movies previously. Because I think that for Parasite, probably, he wrote the script, but it's like, you know, he's working with other people. He's not this massive, massive success. So he's getting more feedback. When people have feedback, he sort of has to listen to it more to fine tune stuff. Where I think when you've had something as successful as Parasite and someone says, hey, like, I actually think maybe you should do this, you can be like, no, I actually disagree with that. And you don't have to take that note and you don't have to really consider it. And it felt to me that he had a good idea, and probably when he pitched the idea to the studio, they were like, oh yeah, this sounds great. And then at some point in the execution, there were just like a few too many ideas going on, and there wasn't anybody who had the ability to be like, okay, we need to cut this, 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 and this, and that will make these parts better.
I mean, I just feel like it, you know, it's always that like sophomore slump too. Like, usually after a big win, the next movie's not as good. And I'm trying not to be biased against that. And I definitely don't think this is by any means like a death knell. Like, you know, like, I think he's a very good writer, film director, like all of the above. So it is kind of like worrisome that this isn't necessarily doing great box office numbers, because of course, people love any excuse to hold a person of color or marginalized person down. So I'm hoping it can make its money back, but it's not looking great.
I mean, the thing with this is, I mean, the critical response has been fairly good. Like, it has a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not bad at all. I think that they were very smart to move this movie from something that would come out in the fall, like for prestige-y time, to this March release date, because I don't think that there's a ton of competition these next couple of weeks, especially with like big sort of sci-fi things. And I think that this could sort of chug along and make a decent amount of money, at least enough to kind of capture what it was made for. I also don't know what the rollout has been internationally either, because this feels like a movie that you could, you know, that could very easily do well overseas. Like, is this going to play in China? Is this going to, you know, like,
yeah,
I could see it making up some money there. And then also this feels like the type of movie that would do well on like VOD and streaming and stuff. Like, I think that people are curious about it and it's done well enough, even if it hasn't, you know, gone gangbusters. So I don't think that this will be a mark necessarily on his resume, especially because this movie doesn't feel like it was really going for Oscars too much anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think of when you make like whatever movie Brady Corbet makes next after The Brutalist, like if it's very up its own ass and annoying and everybody hates it, I think like then that is gonna be you know, then that would cause people some some pause about giving him more money.
Yeah.
You know? Where with this, it's like, oh, he made this really, really great movie. Then he made this sort of like wacky sci-fi comedy thing, like that was entertaining. And then, you know, whatever his next movie is might be something smaller or, you know, in a different direction. So I feel like I don't think that he'll get like blacklisted for this. There's a lot of worse movies that make a lot less money than Mickey 17 has.
Yeah.
Such as like The Jungle Cruise. Like, where is that? Where is that director?
Do you think you'd be a good expendable?
I mean, no, probably. Like, I think, I just feel like I don't have that many skill sets. So I don't know what you would use me for necessarily. Like,
testing illnesses.
I mean, yeah, I guess I could be good at that. I mean, Lord knows, I've spent a lot of years now, or not a lot, I guess, but I've spent a lot of time being ill, so I can obviously do that.
Yeah.
But, like, if I have to go out and sort of, you know, fix the side of a spaceship or whatnot, I would think you'd want someone with a little bit more skill set than me.
Well, he has no skills. That's kind of the gag, is he's like, what am I supposed to do with these wires? And they're like, oh, actually, it didn't matter. We just want to see how this exposure affects your flight.
Oh,
your
yeah. Flesh. Can you take off your glove? We want to see what your hand looks like. Okay, so maybe I would be a good expendable then.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short, Matt. You could do it.
I think I'd be a very sassy expendable, though, which he does not seem to really have that speed within him.
Yeah.
And I think there would be, if I was expendable, there'd be more shots of me like trying to escape somehow and getting killed by security.
Oh, really? You think you... I feel like you get Mickey 17 vibes where you'll just be like, okay, I'm just along for the ride, you know? You think you'd try to break out?
Well, I think if I knew that, like, there really wasn't that much bad that could happen to me, I would be trying more things. Mm. Like, because he doesn't really seem like he's trying much.
Oh, so, like, out of curiosity, you'd be like, let's see how far we could push this.
Well, or just like, I don't know. I think that I wouldn't want to work as like a servant on a spaceship.
Right.
Okay. And if I thought, oh, you know, if I try to escape and they shoot me in the back of the head, then I just, you know, get rebirthed and I can give this another go. That I might be like, oh, quick, no one's looking. Like, let me, whatever. Or in the same regard, I might be more likely to, you know, like, oh, let me stab Mark Ruffalo to death because it's kind of like, well, what's the downside for me? You know, like I'd be more of a martyr or something.
That's wild. Yeah.
I think if I was an expendable, I would be thinking about it in more ways than just sort of let me do my job and go to sleep.
Yeah. Right.
I think I'd be like, wait, universe. I'm the only person who has this power on this ship. Let me like think about how I can use that to help myself or other people.
Yeah.
Do you think you would be a good expendable?
Maybe you should go the way of like Chris Evans in Snowpiercer and become the leader, you know, become the
and maybe I would.
Revolutionary. You know, use your people not pleasing your charisma to get people on your side, you know, to make your own cult of personality and then take over the ship that way. I think you could do that.
Okay, but what about you? What are you doing?
I honestly think I'd be good at being an expendable. I'd be like, whatever, you know, I'd be like, okay, fine. Like, this is already how I feel going into work every Monday, you know? I'm just like, yeah, let's do it. Like, you, I don't think I'd like the pain and like being sick or whatever, but I also don't think I would mind dying that much, you know, like knowing that that it's not really dying. I'd be like, yeah, whatever. Like, it makes sense logically to me that this would be a useful person to have on board in this scenario. And so there's like a lot of good that's done, you know, he saved them all from getting infected from the atmosphere. And that's, I think that's a good thing. Like, obviously I don't, like, it's like the morality of it is interesting, but I also think he made his choice and it makes sense. Like, it's a good role. They weren't forcing him to do it, but I think you should be able to have like a, okay, I'm done with this clause where like you can get out of servitude whenever you want. But I think the premise of the role is an interesting one in that scenario, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess another thing that I was a little bit confused by is, do the new versions have the memories of the versions who died before him?
Yeah, yeah, that's what they said, is that they, you know, in the brick, it's not just his body, but it's every memory up to that point. And that's why he has to do the scan every, I don't know what they said, like every few weeks or something, so that they can update the memory box. So I think it's like backing up your phone. It's like you'll have all the same things except maybe like the last hour. Right. But even
but
that.
It felt like he remembered dying.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, yeah, so that's true. So maybe there's some sort of.
I was trying to figure out how that
is. Some
exactly.
sort of Wi-Fi connection happening.
Because
it's
because if,
cloud-based.
If that's the case, then where you do remember everything, then it's sort of like a little bit like immortality almost, where it's like you can live, you know, 30 years and then die and then reset in your younger self, but you have those 30 extra years of memory. So if that was the case, you know, then I'm like, oh, well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because then you're just getting smarter and you get
you're
you know
saying
I mean?
Keep the body young, but store the mind in the cloud.
Yes.
So that you can upload when you feel like it into a young body. Well, yeah, I mean, I think that was the question on the sidelines of this film, is sort of like, is this body printing machine good to have, or will people just abuse it? Like,
yeah, but it never really got into that in a
yeah
in
it
a,
just decided, you know what, it's not worth our energy, we're just gonna blow up the machine.
Right. Well, and I also do think that is sort of a valid approach as well.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. But I was just saying, as an expendable in this universe where expendables are for one task,
yes,
which is human testing, I get it.
I don't think you'd be a good expendable.
You don't think so?
No. I feel like you are too, like, you just are too, like, I don't give a fuck energy to be an expendable.
Well, yeah,
you know?
But that's the perfect energy to have. Because it's like,
so,
yeah, I'll go
like,
cuddle these aliens because,
think,
like, whatever.
I think you want, like, more, like, sort of worker bee kind of energy. Like, I think
yes.
the person who you'd want as an expendable is, like, Rob, who's, like, very eager to please and would, like, do whatever they sort of tell
oh
him to.
God.
You know what I mean?
Rob will,
like,
no, that's not,
like,
I don't think
like,
Rob is worker bee energy.
Like,
that's offensive.
I mean, not necessarily, but, like, he's just somebody who feels like would sort of be down to do things. And if someone's like, oh, come on, like, put on this poison powder or whatever, he'd be like, okay, and put it on. Where I feel like you'd be like, you guys are stupid. Like, what
but
are we doing
I don't
doing
think I'd
here?
Think that, because on the opposite side of that is it makes total sense. Like, there's a moral good to doing that. Like, so it is... It is like a worthy enterprise of my flesh and bones to be like, you know, because they're not just like seeing like, oh, how does the human respond to like, it's like actual scientific study being done. And I think that is an interesting premise for someone who wants to be doing a job based in doing good for the world instead of enacting harm.
But I sort of feel like it's not. Like, I don't know, it's kind of not portrayed that way in the movie at the very least.
Right. I mean, because again, there's a lack of humanity to it, but I'm saying I'm dead enough inside.
In our
I'm
version
dead enough inside that I'm like, okay, yeah, fuck it. but also I'm motivated to keep on doing it because at least it's doing something good in this fucked up world.
Okay. Okay, interesting. Readers, call in. Who do you think would make a better expendable, me or Shelby?
I mean, you said you'll be doing jailbreak from day one, so
right,
I
yes,
definitely
no.
win.
Well, because I'm sort of, I don't think either of us would be very good at being expendables, because I feel like I am too sort of like restless.
Yeah, and you like variety.
Yes, and you're too like sassy.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is like I might talk back, but I'll also go out and I'll do their human testing.
I'm looking
to
at
protect
this from
others.
The perspective of the scientist. I'm like, if I had to pick, like, if
you're saying
option,
if they want to roll the dice on someone, who are they most likely to pick? Well, they should do some psychological testing on me.
Like,
and
sure, you might have been able to like do some moral gymnastics to think that, oh, okay, this is like is actually good for society, but I think that they would still find you annoying to deal with as a expendable
Definitely.
Worker bot person. And I think that they could get somebody who is a little more brainless who would sort of just be like down for, you know, whatever, like
right.
like the character is in the in the show. And I think I am a little too much like prankster energy for them and would be using my newfound abilities for, you know,
you got that weasel
creative
energy. You know, you're not giving golden retriever, you're giving wily.
No, I would be like sneaking off to like hook up with somebody random, or, you know, stealing things. Like, I think especially if I'm on this ship with all of these evil like corporate overlords, I would definitely be trying to figure out how to, you know, screw some things up.
Yeah.
Which maybe you would too. And maybe it would sort of be a Nikki 17 meets How to Blow Up a Pipeline energy.
Yeah. It'd be a long con.
Repeatedly
it's like, okay,
trying to destroy the spaceship.
Let's figure out how we can all live on this planet we're forced to reside on now. And then once I've ironed that out, then I go, you know, vive la revolution.
You would be a better revolutionary leader than I would. So I think that's damning with faint praise. I think I would be a very bad revolutionary leader. I don't feel like I have the ability in me to sort of like give rousing speeches to people, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'd be like, come on, you guys, let's do it.
But you could be my guy in the chicken suit. I think you would really thrive in that role. Hype guy.
The moment I'm meeting those creepers, I'm just hanging out with them. I'm like not coming back to the ship. I'm just like, hey guys, like, you guys seem like cool people. Let's all just sort of vibe together out here in the snow.
Yeah, for sure.
That's another reason why you wouldn't last very long as an expendable. All that snow.
Oh, I know. That's true.
Because you'd just be like, oh, it's so cold. I want to go to a hotter planet.
Yeah, exactly. I would definitely destroy my own ship at that point.
Okay, well, I'm sort of like, is there anything else to talk about in this movie? Like, the movie's oddly sort of very complicated but not very complicated at the same time.
I think painting with the broad strokes, it's like we could sit here and analyze every scene in the film, but I think we both know where we each stand on that, you know, on each scene.
Well, and also
basically,
I think if we did that, we would end up analyzing the scenes in the film in more depth than the film analyzes the scenes in the film, you know? Yeah. It's like, even with the talks of cloning, it's like we have gone about 50 steps further than whatever moral quandaries are presented by the movie and the characters.
Yeah.
So
for sure. So we did it.
We did it. Congratulations to us. I am glad though that we got to sort of watch a fun original concept movie, because, you know, that doesn't always
I think next week we can do the Megan Fahey movie. Megan Fahey, you know, the one who from White Lotus.
Yeah, she's in a movie.
Yeah, she's in a movie about a date that goes wrong, but it's like a drama. It's like a thriller.
It's
sort of like Eagle Eye. Do you remember Eagle Eye?
Oh boy, do I remember Eagle Eye. Yes, I do.
That's supposed to be good, though. I've seen some surprised reviews where they're like, oh, wow. I think it's giving like Invisible Man type.
What's it called? Megan?
It's called The Drop or Drop Call or something.
Drop 2025. Drop. Yeah. Okay, wait. When does this come out?
I thought it was next weekend, but maybe it's April.
Drop. It comes out April 11th in the United States.
Okay, fine. Okay, whatever.
So you really jumped ahead on that one.
Oh my gosh. Jumped I was really excited gun. About that.
Okay, well, let me pull up the list of movies that are coming out actually this year.
Yeah.
Okay, we have The Parenting, which is that another Parker Posey movie that's going straight to Max. We could learn about Buddhism and tsunamis. No, Piper. There's Novocaine, the Jack Quaid movie. I feel like that is everywhere. Black Bag, the other Steven Soderbergh movie that's coming out with Cate Blanchett and Michael Fassbender.
Did you see that?
I did, but I sort of don't think there's that much to discuss in it.
Yeah.
You know what actually we should do an episode on? And I hate to even bring this up, but I feel like it would be the most entertaining for us and perhaps our listeners. The Electric State, the Millie Bobby Brown, Chris Pratt Netflix
movie. Unhinged looks terrible. Okay, perfect.
I think it has a 10% Rotten Tomatoes currently.
Perhaps we cover
that, we'll dare that I say.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's like robots or something in it. I'm like looking at the I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and there's a bunch of actors listed as like the cast, and then there's a bunch of actors listed as voices. So Coleman Domingo is in it, apparently.
Very exciting.
Okay, this looks bad. Okay, well, let's just agree that we'll be watching that this weekend.
Okay, sounds good.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. We will be back next week to talk about The Electric State, among other things. And send in your mailbag questions, because in a couple of months we'll be doing a mailbag episode. We'll answer whatever you send us.
Correct.
Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Talk to you later. Bye.